Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Seeking Sustainability. This episode is a little bit different in that it's actually my interview from another podcast. So a few months ago, I was interviewed by Mary and Emma Kingsley from the Good Dirt podcast. They are this incredible mother-daughter duo who host a podcast that has not only an incredible following, but also interviews tons of incredible people and voices in the environmental space. So when they reached out to me, naturally, I was so flattered and excited, and I really enjoyed talking to them. They were so generous and let me have this audio file to share on my platforms. So I've kept their introduction and all of the original content in the podcast. The interview starts at around like 12 or 13 minutes if you want to jump and just listen to that, but their introduction is in the beginning as well. And in this episode, we talk about a lot of different things, but they really touched upon or wanted to talk about the episode I had posted over the summer where I talk about my shift in my perspective on environmentalism and what it means to me and who I am as an environmentalist in this world. And I talk about, you know, like I said, my journey as an environmentalist, the role that privilege has played in that journey, how my perspective has shifted, and kind of the things that I'm navigating every day in being a very, very imperfect environmentalist, and how kind of at the end of the day, there's no perfect formula to be an environmentalist. We're all different and we all come from different places and perspectives and whatnot. So environmentalism can mean something different to all of us. But anyways, it was so lovely to speak to them. And it was also really cool to kind of switch roles and instead of interviewing someone being asked questions, because in that conversation, I think it was really refreshing and I was kind of reminded of why I love environmentalism and how reminded that I can talk about it for hours and not get tired of talking about it. So I think it was really refreshing and it was a really great way to kind of get out of myself and switch it up a little bit. Just be reminded of why I love what I do and love the earth and that I love having conversations about the earth, which is exactly why I have a podcast in the first place. Anyways, thank you so much to Mary and Emma for such a wonderful conversation. And I would highly recommend giving them a follow. I'll have all of their information in the description box of the podcast and whatnot. A couple of general housekeeping notes, or really just one. I've changed the cover art for the podcast. So it's pretty similar, but it's a little bit of a switch up, a little bit of warmer colors. And it just felt like it was time. And so that was something I've been working on recently and why I haven't really been posting to social media. I wanted to wait until I had the you know, new cover design done. So anyways, give that a little glance, a glimpse, check it out. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it. And that's it. So I guess without further ado, here is my interview with Mary and Emma, and I hope you enjoy it. When I think of the good dirt, I just think of super healthy soil. Then what comes from super healthy soil? Super healthy vegetables, and then super healthy people. And then basically the world just becomes a better place with some really good dirt. And then I think from the perspective of your podcast, okay, how cool is it that a mother-daughter duo is telling the stories and sharing the stories and voices of so many different people from around the world, and that you guys came together to create an awesome passion project and getting to make new friends and share ideas through your love of the earth.
You're listening to the Good Dirt Podcast. This is a place where we dig into the nitty-gritty of sustainable living through food, fashion, and lifestyle.
And we're your hosts, Mary and Emma Kingsley, the mother and daughter founder team of Lady Farmer. We're sowing seeds of slow living through our community platform, events, and online marketplace.
We started this podcast as a means to share the wealth of information and quality conversations that we're having in our world as we dream up and deliver ways for each of us to live into the new paradigm, one that is regenerative, balanced, and whole.
We want to put the microphone in front of the voices that need to be heard the most right now. The farmers, the dreamers, the designers, and the doers.
So come cultivate a better world with us. We're so glad you're here. Now, let's dig in.
Good morning, Mom.
Good morning, Emma.
Something that I love so much about this podcast and this project and Lady Farmer and all the wonderful people that we meet is hearing about people's journeys and where they started from and where they have been and where they want to go, looking at what is my impact and how do I want to live every day and what do I feel like is missing and how can I make that for myself. There seems to be this really beautiful, fun way of looking at your life in these terms. I just think it's a really fun place to connect with people. And I thought that we could chat a little bit about our own, I'm calling it a slow living journey, but I think it's also a sustainability journey up until this point. I imagine anyone listening is somewhere along the spectrum too, of either wanting to be more sustainable or considers themselves pretty well versed in this area. So I think it's always fun to check back in and talk about our own journey. So
yeah.
Briefly, if you wouldn't mind sharing your, I guess, elevator pitch of like what your sustainability journey is.
Oh, wow. So first of all, I want to say that I feel like your generation is so far ahead of where I was in terms of even thinking about these things or being conscious of these things. And I just think that's probably the way it should be. That's probably the natural order of things, where each generation is a little more evolved in certain ways, not always. Mm-hmm. But I would love to have been so aware of all these things when I was your age. I also feel very, very grateful that I've had these years to develop my own, what we now call slow living journey. I don't think it had a name before Lady Farmer, but especially since Lady Farmer, we've really put a name to this. I'm just so grateful for the learnings in the community and all the things that I've been able to explore through this platform. And I just want to tell people out there that, and we say this all the time, but it just is worth repeating over and over again, that you start small and you start with little things and you just start by paying attention and you will see change. You will feel better. You will look at things differently and it won't be a chore or a task. It'll be something that comes very naturally to you as a true desire to do things differently.
But what about you specifically? And what's a moment kind of in the beginning? And then what's a moment like more recently in the past few years where something else shifted, maybe even in a different direction? What are a couple of those things? Because I think it relates to our conversation today with our guest.
Yeah. So real specifically, I think when I became aware of the problems in fast fashion, which is something that had been not on my radar before. I was just like everybody else, unconsciously just buying whatever. Mm-hmm. And so when I learned about fast fashion and you and I decided to start Lady Farmer, and we learned all these things. And then it started transferring to other things, other purchases, other decisions that I was making in my life, other consumer decisions. And now, more than 6 years later, I realized that my consumer and living habits are really different than before. And I don't feel like I have to live this way. It's something that doesn't feel like pressure. It just feels like the way I want to do things. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it. Yeah. I think for me, similarly, I really started living this way growing up with you as a mom, just really aware of, you know, recycling and eating healthy food. And by healthier, I mean organic, no chemicals, all that. You were very into that. And then the personal responsibility part came in also, like you said, when I learned about fast fashion, because I thought, wait a second, I consider myself somewhat environmentally minded and I love clothes and I buy them a lot. So this is somewhere where I'm unconsciously participating in this thing. So that's obviously where we started Lady Farmer. And then I think over the course of Lady Farmer, the biggest thing that's changed for me is I think at the beginning of Lady Farmer, and it's probably been said even on this podcast, I was 100% like the power is with us. It's the power is with the people. That is how we change. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, I do definitely believe that's true. And I believe in personal responsibility. But I think in the greater problem of whatever you want to call it, climate change, the world, the environment deteriorating around us, we're not going to solve it by buying greener things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I thought was possible at the beginning of this project. And that's since shifted for me. Something else has shifted is I used to think, oh, talking about it isn't enough. You have to do something. But I think talking about it is necessary. Yeah, yes. Talking about it is so necessary. So obviously I think that because we have a podcast. Yeah. But those are the biggest things that I think have changed for me in this journey.
So I would respond to that. If you ask me, do our individual actions shift things? The answer is yes and no. No, to the extent that if I'm the only one that's composting my food, for instance, instead of throwing it in the trash, if I'm the only one doing that, no, it's not going to shift things. But to your point, if we get on here and talk about it over and over again, like we do, or any number of things we talk about, ways to avoid plastic, what you choose to buy, we get on and we talk about that a lot, and we have new listeners all the time, and people may be hearing these things for the first time or the 100th time, whatever, then that does have an impact when people do change. And again, to my earlier point, I think I can safely say this. When you make these changes, they become so inherent, they become so much a part of you that it doesn't feel like a task or work or something that has right. to be overcome. It just is. It's the way you want to be. And again, about the food waste and so forth, and I don't mean to sound hyperbolic, but, you know, composting, turning our food waste into compost is really a joy because I realize what it's doing. And to not do that, to throw my food in the trash now actually kind of hurts. So I don't do it, but if I had to do it, if I was in a situation where I had to do it, I was in a place where there was no other option, it would hurt. So these decisions over time have changed me. So that's what I would call my slow living journey.
If you are looking to change, to start making different decisions, to examine each of these different aspects that seem really overwhelming, a great place to start is the Lady Farmer Slow Living Challenge.
Oh, yeah.
We have done it every year for the past few years around this time in January, February. And this year we are starting all together on February 6th, that's a Monday, and you need to sign up for it specifically so that you get all the right emails and so that you're following along exactly, and we will give you prompts and things to do or not do and just think about every day, every week for 4 weeks. So it's a full month transformational experience, slow living challenge, and it's a really fun thing to do as a community.
Yeah.
And we're all into slow here. So it's kind of our new year reset. So that's the Slow Living Challenge. And if you'd like to join us for the Slow Living Challenge, you can sign up at the link in our show notes. It'll also be easily found on our Instagram page and on our website at ladyfarmer.com. It is free to participate, totally free. So keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah. I want to speak to that a little bit. The Slow Living Challenge is something that you get to decide exactly how you want to approach it. And you get to decide your level of engagement. But as Emma said, it's at least some things to think about. Mm-hmm. And we know Definitely. From talking to a lot of guests and people who have done this before, sometimes people enter into something like this and it becomes stressful and angst-driven and guilt-driven and just feels like something that's insurmountable. And I think our conversation today speaks to that a little bit, don't you, Emma?
I do. Today we're talking to Julia Blanford. She is a graphic designer and content creator who has a background in digital marketing. And we found her through her podcast. And so she has had this lovely podcast going for a while now, talking about all different topics in the sustainability realm, like this podcast. And when I found her and I listened to her most recent episode, at the time, she was expressing some things so openly and vulnerably about, you know, I have the sustainability podcast and I started it with this mission and I was talking about these things and now I'm thinking about these things and it's different. And I just was really struck by her openness and her willingness to question herself and her journey and what she was putting out there. So we couldn't wait to have her on.
Yeah, and we thought, what a fun, revealing conversation, especially from someone younger. Julia identifies herself as on the cusp of the millennial and the Gen Z generations. So we found it really hopeful and enlightening to hear how Julia and her contemporaries are approaching all these challenges. And she was very open and transparent about her doubts and her frustrations and where she hit obstacles and where she even questioned herself in this journey.
So Julia's currently in Chicago. That's where she recorded this interview from. And while she has a degree in fashion marketing and management from Savannah College of Art and Design, she is looking to pursue a master's degree in landscape architecture. And you'll hear her chat a little bit about her plans in the podcast. She is just so creative and she's a wonderful storyteller. And we really enjoyed having her. And we hope that you enjoy and learn something as well.
So here's Julia Blandford of the Seeking Sustainability podcast.
My name is Julia Blandford, just turned 24, so nearing my mid-20s, crazy time. I currently live in Chicago, Illinois, but I'm originally from Maryland, so grew up on the Chesapeake Bay. That was, you know, the environment was always intrinsically a part of my life, whether I realized it or not. I was never like an outdoorsy, feet in the dirt kind of kid. That's like a very new thing for my brand identity. I lived in Savannah, Georgia for a few years. I attended the Savannah College of Art and Design, and that was pivotal because I had always wanted to go into the fashion industry, and not so much when I say fashion industry, I mean like fashion industry, not apparel industry. But like when you think of Devil Wears Prada, Vogue, like the most stereotypical fashion industry you can think of, that's what I wanted to do. I was never outdoorsy. I was never into plants or animals, anything like that. All of that is super new. Fast forward to around junior year, I started on my own time, kind of in my classes, learning about the apparel industry from a broader spectrum or a broader scope, zooming out and realizing that, oh my gosh, this industry is so deeply corrupt and so damaging to the environment. And that not only is it a massive industry where we had been learning about it from a very like niche, again, like very stereotypical fashion standpoint, if that makes sense, that is actually this massive global industry that has a huge socioeconomic impact and has a huge environmental impact. And in tandem with that happening, I was like working at a yoga studio and I went vegan. I'm no longer vegan. I grew up in a hunting family. So, you know, so that all of that was kind of going hand in hand with me falling in love with, you know, environmentalism and developing a relationship with the earth. And again, because I was from Maryland, where you learn about the Chesapeake Bay, that's part of your curriculum, environmentalism in some way, even if I didn't realize it, was always a part of my life. So it just took me a while to discover it. I graduated in 2020, which was madness. Could not find a job. It took me a couple years to get like a full-time job. I was doing freelance work and working odd jobs. And I volunteered on a farm for a month, which was fun. But that was when I wanted to start the podcast because I realized, A, we're quarantined. So there's like, I'm not engaging with a lot of people. And B, I don't know, I'm a talker. So if it's not like the most millennial Gen Z thing to be like, if I have thoughts, let me publish them and put them on the internet. And plus, I was just I'm such a curious person. As much as I love to talk, I do love to also listen to other people. And the world is filled with really fascinating people that have a lot of things to say and to teach us. So that was kind of my thought process behind starting the podcast. And now I'm in Chicago, and that was a long spiel, but yeah, I'm a graphic designer currently.
What brings you to Chicago? Is it a new job?
Yeah, I was already eyeing Chicago anyways, because it's way cheaper than other major cities like New York and even DC and LA and other big cities. I got a job offer. It's a remote job, but the company's based in Chicago. So I wanted to move here anyways. And I love it. Have not experienced a Chicago winter yet. Very nervous. We'll definitely need to buy a parka, like literally a parka. So far, I'm loving it here.
And so tell us more about your starting the sustainability podcast, and because you have such awesome topics on there and you've had some really cool people on. And I'm really interested in hearing your journey with sustainability and the kinds of things you've gotten to explore there and where that's taken you.
Yeah. Well, okay. Thank you. Someone also gave me that compliment the other day and I was like, dang, that's so nice. And also same to you guys. I was looking through your Instagram, and Emma, I know I told you this, that like there are people that you guys have interviewed, because you guys have interviewed just like a plethora of amazing people. And what you're doing is really similar to like my goal too, is just interviewing a really wide
broad spectrum of people. But yeah, some of the people you've talked to are on my email list, which is really exciting. So like you said, a lot of cross-pollination, which is super, super cool. But yeah, I started it, like I said, just kind of as a hobby, as a passion project. And like anything, no journey, so to speak, is linear or black and white. So I started it just as a way to have conversations with people. And another thing that I had thought of was, I believe that most people can develop an interest in, I don't want to say environmentalism, but also in the state of our planet, and because we're all affected by it. And that someone's entry point to developing an interest in the environment might be different. So for someone, it might be honestly the most like hippy dippy crunchy granola conversation you could think of lights a light bulb for someone. And then for someone else, maybe the ocean. For someone else, maybe food and agriculture. For someone else, maybe like financial stuff and ESGs and things like that. So that was kind of why I wanted to have a really broad spectrum of topics, because I don't know, you never know what might resonate with someone. And again, it's this a really, really, really broad web of a topic where there's so many different approaches you can take to environmentalism, yeah. Entry points.
Pause. What's an ESG? I don't know what
that is. An environmental sustainable governance. I didn't know what it was until I interviewed someone. It has to do with investments. So
cool.
So for people who are into like fintech, investing.
What about like crypto? Is it the same world or kind of different?
I think it can. I don't know. I'm so bad at that. But okay. Yeah. So like, for example.
New podcast topic for us.
New podcast topic, right? But yeah. So environmental sustainable governance is that's what ESG stands for. I actually have an episode coming out about that.
Cool. We'll link it.
Yeah. And I do have an episode about that already came out that breaks that down with this woman who used to work in the corporate finance world. So that one's really helpful. But yeah, my journey with sustainability. I mean, when I was in college and I got into this thing we call environmentalism, it was like hardcore. I went from someone who was studying fashion and was always passionate about acquiring clothes and makeup, which is not always a bad thing. I don't think it's like makes sense to always label that as bad. Excessive consumerism as a systemic issue, yeah. But like people wanting to have a fun wardrobe and wear makeup, it's not bad. But I like went from that to being like, I'm going to go zero waste. I'm not going to wear makeup. Even though it's this thing that I loved, I am like only going to thrift. That is great for some people, but I've learned that does not work for me. Like, it does not work for a lot of people. I think that's a really unrealistic standard to set for people. Again, to each their own. If someone wants to do that, they have every right to. But yeah, so I went from this like super hardcore, almost obsessive take on it. And then now to like struggling financially after graduating college and being like, oh my gosh, I really just need to pay my bills. And I don't have the bandwidth to like think about these things, as shallow as that might sound. And oh, a lot of my opinions on sustainability, as impassioned as they were, and like I honor myself for that, a lot of them came from a place of ignorance and not understanding, and where I had a lot of my needs met, so I had the energy to funnel into this. So right now I'm kind of trying to figure out who I am as an environmentalist in my mid-20s, still trying to pay my bills and living in a big city where it's harder to be eco-friendly than in a house with a backyard, and still loving the earth and still being an environmentalist at my core, maybe not being so diehard about it. But like, it's, again, it's an ever-evolving journey like anything is. And that's kind of where I'm at now.
It is something we circle around with our guests a lot. This whole idea of the whole range of being passionate about environmentalism and sustainability and love for the planet. And it has many, many expressions. And there's an entire continuum of behaviors that span the gamut. So it's really hard to put it all into one little nugget and say one person is an environmentalist or not, or lives sustainably or not. It's just, it's too much of a squiggly thing to try to do that. As you have expressed, and I listened to your last podcast episode, I guess it's the most recent one, where you reflect on your changing perspectives regarding environmentalism. I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit and some things you've learned and some aha moments, some insights. And of course, you know, the more life experience we have and the more mature we get, you know, our ideas are going to change because we are evolving organisms called humans, and that's what we do. So that year you took off from the podcast where you were sort of talking out loud about your practices, sounds like it was sort of an interesting time for you. So I invite you to talk about that.
So I, you know, leaving college, you know, I was like bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, COVID hit, but I was like, you know what, I am going to go into the apparel industry and like I'm going to be a change maker and I'm going to do all of these things. And like, this is my calling. And I've never felt like more so like I meant to do anything so much in my life. I was just so ready to go. And then reality hit. I was sending I cannot tell you how many like resumes I've sent out, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and which also come with rejection letters. And the reality that the likelihood of me working for quote unquote the perfect company, which really doesn't exist, is pretty small, that as an adult, and again, a lot of this comes with like naivety and ignorance, is like you have bills to pay and like things like that. You know, don't necessarily have like the time to just like wait for the perfect job. And I had thought I had found that. I got a job offer, and as soon as I moved to the place that I was required to move to, I lost the job. And it was a really, really, really bad experience. It was one of the most like surprising and strange experiences of my life. And I was like brand new, had only lived in this place for like 2 weeks, didn't know anyone, and it wasn't like a really hopping area. So that was really hard. And I just had to get odd jobs to like get by, which, so I'm coming from someone, this sounds really, really lame, but coming from someone who went to like, you know, when you're SCAD, which is like one of the top art schools, and when you graduate, they're like, oh, you're going to get the best job because you went to the school. That is not true. And that's not, no institution has a right to claim that. And just, you know, that was like definitely hurt my pride a little bit. So just worked odd jobs and stuff, and was just, you know, it was a really, really, really hard year. And again, what I went through is not tragic in that like I still had a roof over my head and food on my table, and I was living in a great area, and I still have a college degree. Like, I was still living in a lot of privilege. So like, I don't want it to make it sound like I had some sob story. It isn't the case. I went through something that a lot of people go through, and a lot of people go through in tandem with much worse things.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't talk about how hard it is. So,
well, thanks.
It's all good.
But yeah, so that was just really hard. And I just didn't have the bandwidth. I was just so tired all the time from like working in long hours and working so like a couple different jobs and trying to figure out, you just like, how to, you know, get by and stuff like that. So yeah, it was just, it was tough. And I also had to realize like, oh, I can't be zero waste. I'm living in a town where like, I don't really have access to this stuff, like a small town in the South. Mm-hmm. And I was eating a lot of things with canned beans, which like someone could argue isn't perfect. I don't know. I was just like, I mean, like, yeah, like I said, I was just trying to get by and buy things that I could afford, which it wasn't always like the fancy schmancy, like eco-friendly version of something. Yeah. And then I had, doesn't seem relevant, but as someone who's always loved clothes, this was something I struggled with. I put on a lot of weight just from like health issues. And so like, I literally couldn't, like shopping became more difficult. And so that changed my perspective on things. And like, I also couldn't afford the cool eco-friendly brands that I was talking about in college and like touting and stuff. And I didn't wear any of those brands because I never bought them anyways.
You're like, one day I'll buy these when I graduate college and have a job. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I know I feel like I'm probably talking in circles here, but I think my perspective shifted in that I was like, we just have to do what we can with what we have. And what we have, meaning not just like fiscally or financially, but also energetically, mentally, physically, the resources we have. I had access in college to a lot of resources, even though I was in a small town where that wasn't the most like environmentally friendly. It was in Savannah in college, but I had a lot of my needs met. I was going to a nice, nice school, and I didn't have to work. I did work a job in college for some time, but I didn't have to all the time.
Oh my gosh, the dining hall in college. Hello, it's everything.
Yeah, and like, so I had my needs met, and yeah. I had the bandwidth to think about other issues and things like that. And a lot of people, most people don't. Most people don't have access to fancy grocery stores. Most people can't afford that. The world is not made to live in a sustainable way, if that makes sense. In that the way products have been developed, the way packaging has been developed, the way supply chains have been developed are not made to work in alignment with the earth. So I used to want to be zero waste. I don't think that's reasonable to tell someone that they should work towards that. I think if someone wants to strive towards that on their own terms, absolutely go for it. But that's not a reasonable or realistic goal to have. And that's just my opinion. Again, I think it's a wonderful thing. I think people creating zero waste content and products are doing wonderful work, but that's a lot of pressure to put on consumers. And again, nothing is black and white. So being someone who came from a background in the studying the apparel industry, fast fashion, yes, is a terrible, corrupt, systemically problematic industry that has a huge negative environmental and human impact. But at the same time, it has given people access to inexpensive clothing that's stylish. Doesn't mean it's a good thing at all. It doesn't mean it should exist at all, but nothing's black and white. And so I think, yeah, I think my mind just opened a little bit. And again, nothing that I'm saying is revolutionary or that it's nothing new. It just dawned on, took a little bit of time to dawn on me. So that's kind of where my perspective changed.
It's really great. And it's very cool that you're able to articulate it and say it out loud, because a lot of people don't want to say that stuff. It's a hard conversation to have.
And, you know, some people might have an experience like that and decide they were just going to close their mouth about it because in their mind they failed or fell short. And like, mm-hmm. oh, well, that was a thing I was on, but I'm not doing that anymore. But you have the courage to come out and say, you know, things have shifted for me. And they shift for all of us. They shift for all of us all the time.
Life ebbs and flows. Like, mm-hmm. I absolutely felt like I failed. I remember when I was my senior year of college, in my program, I was like the environmentalist girl. And that's what I did all my projects about. And I remember this girl coming up to me and being like, you are the epitome of someone who have found your calling and passion. And that has like stuck with me, and that it was a compliment, but in some ways, not in a bad way, but it kind of haunted me. Like, I was like, oh my God, did I abandon my passion? I still feel like that. Did I abandon the thing that I meant to do?
Oh, Julia, I just want to give you a hug. You're so sweet. You have so much in front of you.
And so I was like, dang, I've always been a career-driven person. I went to a university where everyone is super talented and career-driven. So like for my job, and this happens, I'm sure, pretty much everyone, for my career prospects and path to not go the way I thought it was going to go, and still isn't, like, it hurts your pride and it kind of makes you a little jaded, but like, it's also just reality. And like, it doesn't mean you should quit or give up. Yeah. And that's where I'm now. I'm just kind of figuring out how to balance it out, and it'll probably never be perfect, but it never hurts to try.
Yeah. Well, I think the term environmentalism is several decades old. I think maybe we could argue that it started maybe in the 70s with Earth Day. And I think the Earth Day started in the 70s. I'm not sure.
That sounds right. And like the litter bug campaign.
Yeah, don't be a litter bug. Now, that was the 60s. But in my mind, I'm thinking the term environmentalism started like in the 70s. But I want to say that we're so far beyond that now. We're so far beyond whether or not you care for, quote unquote, the environment. Because even that way of thinking kind of sets us apart as humans from the planet. And I think where we're moving now is like, we're not separate from the planet. We are the planet. We are nature. We are part of the system, even though for thousands of years we've been behaving as if we are not part of the system. So now we're getting it, I think, at some level. A lot of conversations, a lot of news about what climate change is doing to us weather-wise and event-wise. And I think it's seeping into the collective conscious that this is not just about how you as an individual treat the environment. This is how, as a human race, how are we going to shift our way of being on the planet on a very, very huge scale? And that is enough to blow any individual's mind because it's like,
lofty stuff.
What can I do? What can mm-hmm. I do? And whether or not you choose coffee in a takeout cup with a plastic lid or not, is that really going to shift things? And probably not, you know? Yeah. I don't know if there could be enough refusal of coffee cup lids to make a dent in this whole situation.
There could. And there could be, I'm a fan of corporate responsibility. And if Starbucks said, we're not making plastic coffee cup lids anymore, that might make a difference, you know, but
yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting to. Like, individual choices, yes, they matter. Yes, they accumulate all of that. But I think they matter mostly. This is where I think all those behaviors matter the most, in cultivating a real inner passion as individuals that spreads. It spreads throughout your own life, and it spreads to people around you. And you wake people up to things that you've learned, or things you know, or things you're doing. And you talk about it. You talk about it on a podcast. You talk about it to your friends. And that person goes, gosh, you know, I never thought about that. And it spreads and increases until the collective becomes more of a force of change.
Yeah.
And that passion is not a right and wrong. And if you want to be environmentally friendly, then you must use a metal straw and not ever have a to-go cup.
Absolutely. Yeah. I stand by the fact that like nothing is black and white for the most part. And good and bad isn't always black and white even. And that's a loaded statement. But there's no formula for what it means to be an environmentalist. Like, again, for someone that might mean having the most quote-unquote environmentally friendly product. No product is perfect. That's literally impossible. If it's part of a supply chain, like it, you know, there's, which everything is, like, it's not perfect.
Yeah.
So there's no formula. I think that, like, everyone is different. As a collective consciousness, our mentality is not going to be the same from person to person. No one is going to be exactly the same. So that's why, like, I try to keep a really open mind. Like, I come from a hunting family. Then I went vegan and thought that that was, like, the superior, that was, like, the answer. It was veganism. So veganism is, if you're vegan, you were doing more for the environment than someone who eats meat. I personally now disagree with that, because once I started learning about agriculture, took regenerative agriculture courses, started reading books about regenerative grazing and things like that, I was like, oh, actually, animals are meant to be a part of the ecosystem. That's why they exist. But anytime any system is industrialized, which is just the reality of our industries now, it's going to have a negative impact. So yeah, it's all like no system is perfect. Nothing is black and white. Everyone is different. And if that makes sense.
Totally.
Yeah, I think that there's just no formula.
Yeah, you bring up the veganism and then talking about in college how things were just easier for you.
Yeah.
And that reminds me of, I went to a small school in the South too. I went to Suwanee in Tennessee, and we had an amazing dining hall. And I remember actually when I was there, sort of the first or second year, there was a big student like groundswell movement to like, we need to start a farm on the, there used to be a farm on the university, of course, because it's
so cool.
In the middle of Tennessee.
And, Tennessee, yeah.
Yeah, but then they outsourced to Cisco or whatever. So when I was there, the big movement was let's get farm food back in the dining hall. And now I'm pretty sure the dining hall is like mostly farm table, which is really cool. Anyways, when I was there, they probably still do have a vegan line, like just a line that you would walk through and it was all vegan food.
Yeah.
And so people would just decide, oh, I'm going to be vegan. Maybe that's this meal. Maybe that's I'm being vegan now forever. Maybe that's every Monday I'm going to eat vegan. And just sort of that ability to make that decision and have it right in front of you at like accessible in that way. And also you felt at that time, it felt so good. Like you were doing something so good by like eating from the vegan line. And knowing what I know.
And you're like, I have this name badge now. I am a vegan environmentalist. And again, that's nothing bad. There is nothing wrong with that. I eat a lot of plant-based meals.
The umbrella view of like what goes in, it's that food was no different from the other food. It was all the same supply chain food, monoculture, you know, it's all the same stuff. But it's so funny how I guess we're just emotional humans and we want to feel good and like we're doing good.
Yeah.
And if a word can make us feel good, then we latch onto it and we tell other people they should do that too because that makes us feel better. I don't know. I just – that's
– No, I agree. And it's funny because like I don't even really use the word sustainability. Ironic because my podcast is called Seeking Sustainability. I'm not going to change it because like I'm a sucker for good like alliteration.
It's great.
But it's a catchy name. Sustainability. I mean, what even is that? Sustaining the way – the state of the planet at the moment. That's
do we want that?
No,
you don't want to be sustaining this.
what even? It's such a So basically, everything's a hodgepodge of confusion. Nothing is black and white, and I mean everything. I use this analogy constantly because it's the best one I can think of. That this thing we call sustainability is like a never-ending onion. I mean, even if you take like something like a vegan food product and say this one is better. And then you peel back the layers of what went into it. Where was it processed? How was it packaged? How are the beans that are in this grown and harvested? Does that make it better? Or, yeah, I mean, line it up next to, like, a cow, you know, beef. How was it raised? How much methane did it, like, release? Was there runoff into the water from the farm to the nearby waterway? Like, it is so complex.
Yeah. So reflecting on your story, Em, about college and the vegan line and how that was like right in front of you at the moment and just an easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. And also your story, Julia, about your year and trying to make ends meet and worried about your job and all that sort of thing. And also what you said about the world was not created to live sustainable. It's just not. The products that are accessible, the food that's easily accessible, the clothing that's affordable and accessible, all these things are degenerative to the planet. They're degenerative to other humans, degenerative to our health. But the systems that are in place, they are in place. And it takes a lot of effort, a lot of knowledge, in many cases, a lot of money, not all cases. Yep. To go around the systems and to do things outside of the systems. And those are things we talk about a lot in our community and our podcast. And you talk about a lot on your podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah.
How to get around some of these things, you know, small behaviors that we can adopt to lead our lives less entrenched in the systems. So I wanted to explore this idea, and you touched on a little bit, the idea of sustainability, sustainable living, and privilege. And it really takes a certain amount of privilege to be able to engage in this, and to engage in really practicing this, to buy the more expensive
clothing or to buy the organic food or to go seek out the farmer's market, the farm fresh food.
To even have access to the information.
You have access to that. To A, know it exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You need to have access. And like a lot of people live in food deserts.
There's a lot of it has to do with where you are and how you are able to even, as you say, be aware of these things, much less adapt them into your lifestyle. And this is a really big question, but how can we engage in the conversation without that getting in the way? Because sustainability is something that we want to benefit all humans and all of creation. Yeah. And sometimes I feel like we back off of the conversation because there is so much privilege attached to it in people's minds that it's almost kind of shuts things down. People don't want to talk about it because they almost feel apologetic about it. Does that make any sense?
Because it's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable. I think with progress and change, uncomfortable conversations are inevitable. And I think one of the best things we can do is look outside of ourselves and realize that we as individuals are not all-knowing. We do not have all the answers, but a lot of other people possess a ton of knowledge and they have stories and ideas and expertise too that we don't possess. Yeah. I think it's really common, like for my generation, and this isn't a kind of conversation I grew up having literally until recently, is like racial privilege, big factor. Big, huge, huge factor. Urban planning and infrastructure and the education people have access to, that is not coincidence. The land that people have access to for agriculture is not coincidence. Like, there are so many systemic issues that have built up to limit the things that people of color have access to. And that's something that, like, again, I'm saying these things, but I also, like, don't come from a place of inherent deep knowing when it comes to things like that. I'm white. I grew up in a pretty like privileged like middle class family in where I had access to it. I went to public school, but it was like a good public school. I had a good education, had access to college, all of these different things, access to clean air, clean water, good food. My fridge was always full, all of these things. And a lot of it now for me, again, I am by no means perfect. Like, I still have a lot of learning to do. And that's something that I'm wanting to explore more with my podcast, is bringing a wider variety of voices onto the podcast to engage in conversation. Yeah, I think it's holding ourselves accountable as adults to learn the things we don't know, and also sometimes learn how to hush up and listen to other people too, mm-hmm. whose voices have been, you know, silenced or overlooked or oppressed. So I think, yeah, but we have to have these conversations in order to move forward. And then in that, I think we can create a greater sense of community too, if that makes any sense. Like, bringing together different voices. And I have had access to a lot, and there was a lot I didn't know, and a lot of mistakes I've made, and a lot of things that I've expressed coming from a place of ignorance, which is inevitable. You know, we're all human. But I think for me now, it's like, okay, now that I claim to be an environmentalist and there's this thing I'm really passionate about, how can I hold myself accountable and learn more and become more aware and become more empathetic? I think empathy is huge. I know empathy for the earth, empathy for animals, empathy for other people, empathy for the ancestors of people, empathy for communities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The list could go on and on.
It also made me think a lot about, I just kept coming up when you were talking about how when you think about really what sustainability means and really what zero waste means, and you think about, oh, well, how did our grandmothers do it? How did our great grandmothers do it? A lot of times it has to do with spending no money.
Yep.
And when did doing the least wasteful thing and the best thing for the planet get turned around and become the thing that you can only buy at Whole Foods or whatever?
Oh my gosh, that is such a good point. I remember asking my grandma, and my grandma, like, is not like, she's not, she doesn't like sew or knit or like she's not like into any of that. And I remember asking her one time, I was like, would you ever can something? And she was like, why in the world would I want to can, like, what? And I remember talking to my mom about it, because her mom was born in the 20s and she was like super crafty and canned and mended and cooked and sewed. And she always said that, like, these things that we now consider a novelty, which is not a bad thing. I think it's great that, like, we're exploring these things and mm-hmm. romanticizing canning. Mm-hmm. Once upon a time, they were necessities. They were things mm-hmm. that people had to do. People farmed and had gardens because they had to. And I do think it's wonderful for us to explore that. But yeah, it's funny that it's now a trend. And it's also, I remember seeing, it was like a TikTok or Instagram video of people, you know, saving their containers and how it's trendy. Like, it's cool to save your containers, which, like, yeah, okay. I save my containers. But, like, there were people in the comments who were like, my parents, like, we were so poor that we always did that. And it wasn't
really cool. The yogurt, like, containers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love how you say that's not a necessity, but what if that's part of the answer? Like, what if part of the answer to this problem is that we make these things that we think are more work or boring or whatever reason that we're not canning and sewing our own clothes besides to make beautiful TikToks, which is like another conversation. What if that's part of the answer, you know, doing a little bit more with our hands and separating from the supply chain or extracting ourselves from the supply chain and not contributing as consumers. I mean, I don't know how you would feel about that statement. I just sort of put it out there. But
that kind of goes into the privilege thing. And that's something that I thought about a lot, because that's a good point. That would totally be, that's something that, you know, more people should do and things like that. But then it's also hard because it's like, well, what if someone works multiple jobs? Or what if someone doesn't really have like the counter space to do something like that? Or again, it's tricky. It's so complex. And that's not to say that like those things shouldn't happen. Of course they should. Like, just because, like I say, it's impossible to be perfect in an imperfect world. And that seems like at face value a pessimistic statement, but it doesn't mean that we can't or shouldn't try to do better and be better, think outside the box and have these conversations. But it's tricky because, again, nothing's black and white and nothing can be a blanket statement for everyone. So some people will absolutely have the bandwidth and interest to can and garden and compost, but other people might not. So it's tricky. It's tricky. There's no like one solution. Yeah. I think it's that in tandem with a million other things that could be done.
So then I want to ask the question, but then why? Where's my bandwidth going? If I have to work three jobs, is it so that I can have enough money to put food on the table that I could be not working one of those jobs and grow and can my own food? What's the trade-off here? Where have we been told, sold? And to me personally, it usually comes back to, I sound like a crazy anti-capitalist person, but it's something where it's like we're in this system that was designed to make a very small amount of people very wealthy and the rest of us don't matter. And also the earth doesn't matter. And so why are we on this hamster wheel within the system being like, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, this doesn't work? I think we kind of need to like go find another, like get off the hamster wheel.
No, like we're all cogs in the wheel that we like have to be a part of in literally order to survive, like in order to get by. It's so tricky. There's like no perfect answer. And yeah, I think it just depends on the individual. Like for you personally, as Emma, as someone who's passionate about the environment and like, you know, your mom has a farm, which is so cool. Yeah, maybe for you personally, it would be quitting that job and growing your own food. And I think like, I'm super passionate about gardening. Am I good at it? No. Because that knowledge has kind of been lost. It's not something that we pass down anymore. But I can definitely relate to that. And I think that, you know, things like that are something we should talk about more and introduce to people and have workshops, or maybe single moms or like things like that, teaching people skills that used to be considered like practically like peasant skills, like things that the normal working class did, but also once upon a time. But also it's tricky, like, you know, that was in an era where a lot of women didn't work, and so their day consisted of doing those things, homemaking skills. So yeah, again, I feel like I keep coming back to like, it's not black and white, which seems like there's no solution, and that's totally not the case. But I think it just depends on the person. But yeah, I mean, regarding the system that we're in, whew, that's hefty. I mean, you're right, that's honestly what it comes back to if you really like break it down. It's like systemic issues.
So it's interesting to be talking to someone your age. You're amongst our youngest guests, I think. Yeah. And so considering our whole audience, I think there is a segment of our audience of people that listen to this podcast and follow us and have read our book, The Guide to Slow Living, that are very interested in sort of sidestepping the systems.
Yeah.
So from your age group, what do you see in your contemporaries? Where are they with these things?
Ooh, what are the youth doing these days? I don't know. I'm very hip. It's funny because this is going to sound irrelevant. I actually was in the running to get casted for a reality TV show that was supposed to be like cottagecore themed. What that entails, I don't know. But that is relevant. That's relevant.
It's funny. And I don't think you're not the first podcast guest to tell us about this. I think someone else we talked to was also going to do that.
I didn't.
No, they did not. She was like, I didn't want to do it when they told me what it was.
I kind of would have gotten a kick out of that. But
you totally would have. You'd have been great.
Thank you.
Sorry, tell me more.
I think like there are trends that exist. Okay, let's take cottagecore, for example. It's a huge trend. It's like on TikTok, and some people just do it for the aesthetic, whatever. there's validity to that. There's validity when you're talking about slow living to, if you have, you know, the space and time to romanticize the idea of cooking a loaf of bread or baking a loaf of bread and going to the farmer's market and making it cool. Again, not all people have access to those things, but romanticizing thrifting, like all of these things that we could call slow living, like drying herbs and things like that. Like even if you buy, okay, so sometimes I will buy herbs because the farmer's market that is closest to me, even in Chicago, is a 40-minute walk away, which is nuts. So sometimes I'll buy bundles of herbs from a conventional market and I'll hang them upside down instead of like, and dry them instead of throwing out the excess. That doesn't answer your question though. But anyways, I think that there are like trends that are happening on TikTok and stuff that are shedding light on slow living, whether it is framed in the light of like eco-friendly, zero waste living or cottagecore, calling it like this romantic peasant-y, like, you know, slow living lifestyle. Or yeah, I think a lot of it is rooted in like social media trends, people seeing things on TikTok. That's huge. So I think what I see people doing, so this is something we talked about in my program too, is like for Gen Z, whether I'm millennial or Gen Z, I'm somewhere on the cusp, but for the Gen Z generation, some people perceive this generation as like all talk, no action in regards to their consumer behavior.
Right, because they're very like sustainable fashion, but then they are funding Shein, so.
Yes, and that is true, and that is wrong. But with that said, they don't have the buying power right now.
Right.
So like, what are they going to do from a consumer standpoint, like on a large scale, if they don't have buying power, spending power? Now, when they're in their 30s and 40s and they have spending power, oh my gosh. Also, that generation is in like political offices and things like that. The world is going to be a different place. But I think that definitely conversation in general is something that's super big amongst young people. Just being open, talking in an unfiltered way, engaging in conversation, talking about politics, racial justice, the intersection between all of those things and the environment. Intersectional Environmentalist is a really great organization that does exactly that and is, to me, very, very Gen Z and markets to that generation and people who are older, and making videos on TikTok that are being shared. And again, like romanticizing these ideas that zero waste living or slow living or gardening. And so I think just like social media spreading and sharing ideas and opening up conversations and talking to one another.
What about the outside of social media, like maybe at work or, you know, when you're hanging out at out on the weekend or whatever? Do you hear people your age talking about, what do you hear them talking about in terms of consumerism and environmentalism? And what are they talking about person to person? Not what are they putting on social media?
I am like literally a hermit. So I think that's about the worst young person to ask.
No, but I think it's probably reflective, honestly, especially with COVID.
I'm like, gosh, who do I talk to?
That's interesting.
Again, that would like differ from friend group to friend group. It's interesting. This makes me think of my brother. So I have a twin brother and he is Republican. We're so night and day, but he's like always who I think of when I think of the average consumer or something. Like he doesn't really care. I can't say he doesn't care about environmentalism because he's so outdoorsy, but it's interesting because what this question makes me think of is he was talking about his new friends that he has in the city that he lives in, and they're all super liberal, and they're all, his like roommate is vegan and like thrifts and does all these things. This like cool hip guy, but he's vegan. He like does secondhand shopping. My brother was like, what is this world? And I'm like, yeah, this is what the kids are doing. So I think people are doing things. Thrifting is something that's really, really big. That is from a consumer standpoint. That is huge. Rich, poor, good, whatever, good. You thrift.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the secondhand clothing industry, like any other industry, is not perfect. But I think the idea of, you know, reusing, recycling is great. To make that trendy is awesome. I definitely see people using their tote bags and stuff. That is popular. Carrying around their water bottle, that is popular. Doesn't mean every single person does it. Fast fashion, yeah, is big. But I think it also, yeah, it depends on who you're surrounding yourself with, depends on the area you're living in. I think we're moving in the right direction. And I would say outside of social media, but trends don't even exist outside of social media for my generation.
Ooh, well, that's a statement. That is a statement, right?
Whether you realize it or not, like we are, unless you are completely, I can't even say that because unless, even if you don't have an account, if your friend does something and is like, oh my gosh, I found this cool coffee shop that is like low weight, or I found, look at this cool, like these cool pants I got from Goodwill. You're being influenced by the people around you, whether you realize it or not. And they might've been influenced or were likely influenced by social media. And social media isn't just like photos we see, it's videos, it's articles, it's podcasts.
It's people's opinions.
It's people's opinions.
It's people's spins on stuff, too.
We are no longer siloed only to our own communities. We are living a very global, interconnected experience. So that might be a loaded statement, and some people might find that incorrect.
I'm not saying that it's correct,
but my perspective as someone who's in their early, mid-20s is that trends don't really exist outside of social media.
Correct or incorrect or – I just think it's – I don't think you can put it in either category. It's just – it's a fascinating statement. It's really it's a fascinating comment on someone your age and your perspective. So, wow, I'm going to have to think about that one a lot.
And again, social media isn't perfect. I mean, I am very for it. I was very late on the TikTok bandwagon. Is there strange, inappropriate, weird stuff that exists on TikTok? Absolutely. Like anywhere on the internet.
Yeah.
But with that said, I've seen some of the coolest videos on there and people who are makers, creators, thought leaders who talk about the most niche things or are scientists or things like that who would have never been discovered otherwise. And
same. I'm such a TikTok convert and I'm like so old and I started watching TikTok in like 2020.
We should start swapping TikToks.
Yeah.
But I think even like, and again, this might seem so random and irrelevant, but like, I think of my brother, like he hunts, but he has sent me so many TikToks of like animals and he's like, wow, look at this like baby seal. And I'm like, it's opening people's eyes. Like it's doing the work. Like, truly, he'll be like, wow, look at this pig. Like baby pigs are the cutest. And like, you might see bacon, but like, I don't know. It's shedding light on like some of the wonders of the world.
You mentioned slow living a couple of times. And I'm going to put a little caveat on this question for you. See what you think. I want to know what slow living means to you without social media as part of the answer. Like Julia's world without TikTok or without what you've seen as slow living. What do you think slow living actually means?
Well, to preface before I even fully answer, with social media hinders slow living, I think. I think in some ways it introduces you to a lot of wonderful ideas, crafts, recipes, things like that, that can get your creative juices flowing and introduce you to things that you didn't think of before that you can incorporate into your life. With that said, living in our digital world, looking at our screens all the time, it's fast paced. You're constantly refreshing. I constantly am refreshing. Slow living means a lot of things. I think it's almost self-explanatory in that it's slowing down. It doesn't necessarily mean doing less. I don't know how to do less. I am a busy bee. I do a lot and like nothing all at once. I can't explain.
Same.
I have to justify that. But for me, okay, I love to cook. And I discovered my love of cooking. I've always had a terrible relationship with food. I discovered my love of cooking in college when I started making stew. I'm quite literally thinking of writing my grad school admission essay about stew. And this let me explain why, because it ties into slow living. This is like my analogy metaphor. I am an anxiety-ridden, like all over the place kind of person. I'm so ADD. My boyfriend like watches me throughout the day and he's just like, what am I witnessing? The chaos. But when I was in college on Sundays, found this routine where I would go to this little crunchy granola market and it was more expensive, but I would like allot myself like $20 and only get what I needed, only the vegetables I needed. And I would go home. I'd walk there, walk back, which was a slower route than driving, but I loved the walk. And it was on those walks that I learned how to identify certain plants and flowers and things like that in my neighborhood. And I would take as long as I wanted to cut my vegetables. I would cut my vegetables and I would saute my onions and my herbs and I would let that stew simmer. And I started baking some of my own bread. It's not something I always do, but I also would buy bread from this little local bakery that was one of the only bakeries in town and use butter. And I would eat this stew and it was just a wholesome, nourishing experience for the body and the soul. It wasn't a fancy meal. It wasn't anything spectacular, but it took me a while to make and I enjoyed the process and it calmed me down. And it's something about it, simple meal, simple bowl of stew with vegetables, whatever, that arguably once upon a time would have been considered a peasant meal, felt right to eat and to make. Something about it felt ancestral. And I think that's why people make stew. Someone who's listening to this can be like, and what is her TED Talk? But the point of that is that enjoying the process, slowing down, appreciating the feeling of the vegetables in your hand, and then thinking, where did this come from? Because like, what an intimate thing for someone to grow a vegetable, pick it, it gets shipped, and then you eat it and enjoy it in a bowl of stew. It was with that bowl of stew that, this is my grad essay, guys, what I'm planning on doing, I learned to appreciate vegetables, and I learned to appreciate this neighborhood market, and I learned to appreciate how good high quality butter is on bread. That's slow living. I think it's like appreciating simplicity. It doesn't mean you have to be a minimalist. It doesn't mean you have to bake all of your own bread or sew all of your own clothes. But to sit and mend a pair of jeans, even if it looks awful, or to bake a loaf of bread to share with people, to make a pot of your favorite meal or your favorite stew and enjoy the process and think about the story behind the vegetables and the hands that those vegetables went through and the dirt, the soil that it came from, and then how, what a wonderful thing it ended up in your hands in a bowl. That's slow living.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, I love it. And also, I bet that stew didn't cost you much money at the end of the day.
It costed me nothing. Yeah. That was one of my, it's one of my favorite meals to make. I love to cook. I baked banana bread this morning for a friend. And something that I love about it too, and I think food is one of the best entry points to talk about the environment, to talk about the good and the bad of the world, is because it's something that connects all of us. That how crops ended up in a certain place has a story. How recipes ended up the way they are has a story. And when you really, really look at the food you eat and like think about it, like really think about it, you're like, oh my gosh, the earth is so cool. Like, dang, like these beans, like this apple, I bought some apples from the farmer's market. And I'm just like, you just forget that they grow on trees sometimes because you get them from the grocery store. So that's slow living, I think, is sitting and thinking and feeling and engaging with whatever you're doing.
Oh, so good, Julia.
Oh, yes. And I think that leads right into the next question, is what does the good dirt mean to you? And you can, of course, answer that any way you want.
It's so funny because like the first thing that came to my mind was like, the good dirt, like the good gossip, the 411. No, when I think of the good dirt, oh God, this is probably a bad answer, but I just think of super healthy soil.
Yeah.
That's the good dirt. Like the good dirt is like, okay. And then if I think of super healthy soil, what if that's a starting point, then what comes from super healthy soil? Super healthy vegetables, and then super healthy people. And then basically the world just becomes a better place with some really good dirt. So
yeah.
I think from the perspective of your podcast, okay, how cool is it that a mother-daughter duo is telling the stories and sharing the stories and voices of so many different people from around the world, and that you guys came together to create an awesome passion project and getting to make new friends and share ideas through your love of the earth. And that's pretty cool. Like, that is pretty amazing that we live in a world where that can exist. So yeah, I think that's also a darn cute name. But when I think of the good, when I think good dirt, I think healthy soil. And healthy soil is the foundation for everything. It is the foundation. If I were to like bring, arguably incorrect because there is no singular, as we've concluded in this podcast episode, nothing is black and white. But if I were to say like there was some single, hypothetically speaking, some single solution to healing the earth, it would be good soil, good dirt.
I agree. We agree. Yeah. And so many people we talk to agree about that, that that's where it begins. That's where the healing begins.
It does. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. And before we close, is there anything else you want to talk about or anything else you want to leave people with?
I think something that I ask at the end of my podcast is, as an individual, an environmentalist, or as a mother, an environmentalist, as a business owner, environmentalist, what gives you hope for the future? And I feel like a lot of the things that I said where I was like, you can't be perfect, or like nothing's black and white, or blah, 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 it sounds pessimistic. It's not. I think that it's important to be realistic and to have these conversations and take everything into consideration. But at the end of the day, to still be hopeful and to, yeah, just to have hope. It sounds cheesy, but to tie back to Mary, when you asked me about my evolving perspective on environmentalism, before, I think my passion was coming from a place of rage and frustration, which is very valid, and I still have that. But now for me, you know, in the future, I want to be a landscape architect and design gardens professionally. I want to do that because my love for the earth comes from a place of wonder. It comes from a place of like just being so curious and just fascinated and excited and just like genuinely loving all that the earth has to offer, which includes, you know, people, plants, etc., water, air. And these like mundane things are actually so magical and incredible, as like woo woo as that sounds. But yeah, I think just stay hopeful and stay curious and full of wonder. And I think if people do that, their eyes will be so opened and they can take it from there.
Ah, thank you.
I agree.
Beautiful.
Where can people find you if they want to find you? And
okay, well, if someone wants to find me, they can find my podcast. It's Seeking Sustainability. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, I believe Google Podcast as well. And then the Instagram is at seekingsustainability.pod. A little lengthy. I tried to shorten it and there wasn't any available. And then you can also follow my personal Instagram, which is at julia.blanford. So yeah, and I'll have some new episodes coming out and, you know, new content and stuff now that I'm getting back into the groove of doing it. And thank you so much for having me, guys. You guys are so lovely. And when I'm back home in Maryland, if you ever want to get together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let us know.
This was so fun.
And thanks so much for your time today and your honesty and your openness. And it's just really, really fun to talk to you and get your perspective on everything.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. You guys are so fun. Yeah. Thank you guys so much. You guys are so lovely and sweet and fun. And the work you're doing is wonderful. Yeah. If you ever want to do something else in the future, let me know. I don't know what that would be, but there's always fun things to be done.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much, Julia.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in, calling in, and spreading the good dirt. We love hearing from you. You can reach our listener voicemail at 443-459-1950. That's 443-459-1950. You can find this number in our show notes and in our Instagram profile.
This show is produced by Lady Farmer, a slow living lifestyle community, and the original music is composed and performed by John Kingsley.
For more from Lady Farmer, follow us on Instagram at @WeAreLadyFarmer. That's @WeAreLadyFarmer. Or join us online at www.ladyfarmer.com. We'll see you next time on The Good Dirt.
Goodbye.